This is Bill McClure for the Triangle Radio Reading Service.
This is Richard Dunnigan, and this program is intended for a print and visually impaired audience and is designed with the assistance of print and visually impaired volunteers.
And this is Bob Martin, and I have a problem that is bothering me today.
What's the problem?
Well, maybe I should be talking to Dr. Bill or even Professor Bill.
That's serious?
Well, it is to me. I haven't been able to think about anything else all day long. And just, oh, look, shiny thing.
I think that's your microphone.
Oh, has it been here all the time?
Bob, why don't you just tell us your problem?
What problem? Oh, the one where I couldn't think about anything else. Well, it has to do with a blind person going into a store.
Sounds like a problem that's right down my alley. Maybe just plain Bill can help you out.
Well, okay. I was in the drugstore the other day, and a man walked in who was a deaf mute. He wanted to buy something, but since he couldn't speak, he tried to act it out for the clerk. He held his hand up by his mouth with his fist closed. Then he opened his lips with his teeth still together, and then he made a series of short up-and-down motions in front of his mouth. I couldn't figure out what he wanted, but the clerk snapped his fingers together and then went down an aisle. Pretty soon, he came back with a toothbrush. The man pointed at it and nodded his head. Yes, that's what he wanted, a toothbrush. And since he couldn't talk, he made like he was brushing his teeth, and so the clerk was able to guess that that's what he wanted, a toothbrush. It made perfect sense.
I thought you said the problem involved a blind person.
Well, it did. Or rather, it does. Kinda. You see, there was no blind person actually there, but I got to thinking, what if a blind person were to come in and wanted a toothbrush? How would he be able to get the clerk to understand what he wanted?
What?
Well, don't you see the problem? The blind person could make the same up and down motions, but he wouldn't know that the clerk went off to get a toothbrush or to recognize it when the clerk got back. The clerk might have the toothbrush in his hand, but the blind person couldn't point at it and nod his head. Yes, that's it. So, what does he do?
I may be wrong, but if it were me, I'd just ask the clerk, do you have any toothbrushes? Blind persons may not be able to see, but at least we can speak.
Oh, right, yes. Well, that's sure a load off my mind.
Bob, I think the shiny thing is trying to speak to you.
And while he's involved, let's have a conversation with James Benton, the Community Employment Specialist with the Division of Services for the Blind in the Governor Moorhead School.
That's a good idea.
James, you are a volunteer with the Reading Service. You are a member of the Board of Directors. Tell us a little bit about your background.
I've been here in Raleigh since 1966. I came here at that point to attend school at Governor Moorhead. I was on the Garner Road campus for 8 years, moved to the Ash Avenue campus in 1974, and graduated from there in 1978. Met my wife, Sharon, while we were attending school at GMS. We were married in 1977. We have two children who are now grown. Junior is going to be 32 years old this summer, and my daughter, Renee, will be 30 years old in about 10 days from the time of this recording. Since completing our education, Sharon and I spent several years working at the Raleigh Lions Clinic for the Blind. It is now known as RLCB Incorporated. Did spend 3 years at St. Augustine's College, where I majored in social welfare and urban studies. I left RLCB in 1987 to enroll in a computer program at the Rehab Center for the Blind, and I completed that program in 4 months. Was promised an opportunity to work for a hotel chain. That opportunity was slow in developing, but ultimately I would end up with Holiday Inn Corporation. I started work for them in November of 1989 and worked for them for 10 years before switching to an opportunity with the state. Before leaving Holiday Inn, I served them as a reservation sales agent, a guest service specialist, guest service lead specialist handling ADA phone calls, and the last year and a half I was a member of the training team with a focus on quality assurance. Since leaving to join the Division of Services for the Blind, I serve the Governor Moorhead School students now as a community employment specialist. And what I do is primarily work with job skills training of young people ages 14 to 22. I work with developing jobs on campus, community-based training off campus, and paid work experience for our student population. The primary focus for me and my team is serving kids who are in what we call the OCS program, which is an acronym for Occupational Course of Study. This is a program that is in place to provide an alternate path for graduation for kids who are struggling academically. So I've been involved with that now for almost 12 years. I have several hobbies that I enjoy. Pastime would be reading books on my new digital player. I enjoy listening to Radio Reader Service programming. I enjoy listening to music. Sharon and I have a vast collection of music of all types, and we enjoy getting together and just sitting back and relaxing and just moving through different genres of music. It's just that's very relaxing, very special for us. We are bowlers, avid bowlers, and avid recreationalists in general. We like to camp. We like to whitewater raft. We enjoy the beach, and we do visit the mountains on a regular basis. Bowling is probably the one hobby that I'm known for around the community and across the state. I've actually served on national boards with regards to bowling. I am the past president of the American Blind Bowlers Association and served on their executive committee for 6 years. I love the sport. It's very competitive. It's the one sport that we can engage in where persons can compete, and the only adaptation that's required is a bowling rail. And the bowling rail is an apparatus that we can place on a lane. It's a set of aluminum pipes. It's 15 feet long. We can adjust it to 12 feet if persons choose not to use the full length of the rail. And it goes on your left side if you're a right-handed bowler and on your right side if you're a left-handed bowler. With that device in place, I've gotten my average up over the years, and I've been bowling competitively now for about 29 years. And my average used to be in the 60s, and now I'm about 116 average, which is really good. My high game is 192. But we do have two persons in our league who are totally blind who have broken the 200 barrier. But we're able to take these groups of people across our state to compete and across the country and to different cities. And what we try to do is incorporate with the bowling an opportunity to enjoy the sights and sounds of the cities that we visit, so that our people have a chance to develop positive life experiences. That's very important to me, and it's what brings people together. You go to church, you go shopping, you go to work, people get together and they talk, and they want to discuss the things that are important to them, which typically include their families and the various jobs and accomplishments that the family members have or have achieved, places that you've been, things that you've done, and things that you've seen, the experiences that you have. Those are things that bond people together, and it's important for our people who have vision disabilities to be able to do these same things, and we've been able to create that type of atmosphere and those types of opportunities through the bowling program. So that gives you a capitalization of what I'm about and what I've been doing over the years and the things that matter to me in a major way.
James, we were talking earlier about mobility issues, and you commented that you particularly enjoyed studying mobility at the rehab center when it was in Butner because it gave you the opportunity to walk in an area without a sidewalk. Can you elaborate on that a little bit?
Sure, I'll be glad to. I was introduced to the cane in fourth grade by an instructor by the name of Willie Singletary, who's retired up in the D.C. area now. Started out using the long wooden cane with the hook on it. I used those off and on for several years. Once I reached high school, I became more serious about cane travel, and I had wonderful instructors at Governor Moorhead, and we navigated the campus, and we learned to navigate the neighborhood around the Governor Moorhead campus, and we're speaking of the Ash Avenue campus. And there are sidewalks throughout that neighborhood and over into the Cameron Village area where we were allowed to travel. We also had a zone that we were able to master between St. Mary's and West Street and Hillsborough and Peace Street, which all of that has sidewalks as well. And then once we mastered those zones, we were able to learn bus travel technique and then go into downtown Raleigh and travel in that area. But that was the extent of the inner city travel. We weren't really exposed to streets that did not have sidewalks and crosswalks and lights, and it was all fairly routine once you learned how the traffic flow and the light flow was. You could pretty much do your thing. But when I went to Butner, that was a different experience for me as far as cane travel. I worked with a gentleman named Ken Swearingen. He worked with me traveling the streets of Butner and learning how to navigate streets that did not have sidewalks, in some cases did not even have curves, and not to be afraid to move and travel in those types of environments. I remember him telling me years ago that a lot of his clients were nervous about walking when they were not certain as to what the terrain was going to be like. If the next step was going to be mud or the next step was going to be gravel, or I didn't have that fear. Once I had that cane and I knew how to use it, then you have to become confident, put your trust in that cane and walk behind it and get it done. Because of that, I was really comfortable going pretty much anywhere I needed to go, traveling on buses and going where I needed to go in different places across the state and the country.
Now tell me, isn't a part of your work with the rehab center?
Not officially, no. My job is strictly with the Governor Moorhead School High School program, the transition age kids from 14 to 22. But during the summer, I support the WOW program, which is the World of Work program. I do assist in developing work opportunities for those students in that program who come from other parts of the state.
Oh, yes. And, now, these would be blind and visually impaired students who came from public schools.
Yes, they're coming from public schools in areas where we do not have transition programs. You've got to be able to negotiate your way through cyberspace. You've got to be able to understand and utilize computer technology, handheld software and hardware. You've got to learn how to do these things because the world is spinning around an axis that's generated by a computer today. I was reading an article today that was sent to me by Linda Orent, our director here at the Triangle Radio Reader Service. The FCC, the Federal Communications Commission, is no longer allowing radio stations across the country to license by mail. It all has to be done online now. That's really interesting to read and to know, but it just shows you where we're headed. You've got to have a computer to get things done. You've got to be able to use one in order to participate in getting things done for yourself. So from that aspect of life, I'm really happy with where Governor Moorhead is we have a strong focus on technology, implementing the use of technology for our students, and the rehab center certainly is doing that, and they're very committed to it, and they have lots of staff there dedicated to making sure that our clients are getting the best training possible so they can go out into the world and have a chance to compete for the best jobs, because it's going to involve using a computer. As I work in the community to develop jobs and to work with various elements of the community, linking us to various services and resources, I certainly am going to be involved to a level with supporting the adult program, but it's not what I do on a natural basis. What I'm actually hired to do is to develop work opportunities for kids in the transition program at GMS.
Have you seen an improvement in the employment opportunities for graduates of the Governor Moorhead School right out of school since you've been in your job?
I would say that what we have seen is a lessening of the wait time. For example, when I graduated from Governor Moorhead in 1978, it would be 11 and a half years before I would land my first true gainful opportunity in the community. My wife graduated in 1979, and it would be 10 years before she realized her first gainful opportunity. for full-time work with benefits, competitive pay. Now, in 1989, she turned 30 years of age. I was 31. What I wanted to see was those numbers go down. A really good friend of mine went to NCCU, earned his degree, his master's degree. He had gotten an undergraduate degree from St. Augustine's. He was in his mid-40s when he scored his first major job opportunity working with Holiday Inn. And I'll never forget the day that they hired him. And he came out onto the reservation floor, and everybody was stopping and kind of tapping on each other. And he's just jumping around. He's bouncing. Look at the smile on his face. He's radiant. And it was because he was so happy. But he had received an opportunity that a lot of people, I mean, I worked in that rest center for 10 years. The average employee there was probably 22 years old. He was twice that age when he got his first work opportunity. But he was so thankful, so proud, and felt so blessed to achieve that. It caused him to act like a big kid, and it was the most beautiful thing any of us had seen in a lot of years. But we wanted to see those numbers go down, the average age in which a person became gainfully employed. So that number, not just because of Governor Moorhead's program or other transition programs, but I think because of the dedicated efforts of the staff of DSB across the state, helping to bring those numbers down. So we are getting people in their 20s gainful opportunities on a consistent basis. So when they get to their 30s and 40s, they're looking for their third, fourth, fifth job opportunity.
James, in your experience, have you ever felt that you were less valuable than you would have been if you had been cited, or has anybody encouraged you to believe that somehow you were less of a person because you were blind?
I think that growing up with the disability, as I have been visually impaired all of my life, totally blind since age 12, almost 13, it creates great opportunity for you to meet a lot of people that will question, but what can you do? What can you achieve? You can't see. I think that what happens is a person that does not consider him or herself to be disabled meets a person who is and will immediately place themselves in a role of superiority. They are in perfect physical condition. You are not. Therefore, if they can't envision themselves doing something great without eyesight or without the ability to walk or the ability to hear, then obviously they can't perceive that you could do well either. And so it's a system that kicks in soon as contact is made and it's determined that you are physically different. And so, yes, I think because of that fact, we all encounter, and when I'm saying we all, I'm saying most of us do encounter situations where we meet people, talk with people, even engage family in situations where they think that we're not going to be able to do certain things or accomplish certain goals because of the lack of vision. And I think that is a seed to the anger that most of us carry throughout life as we work to overcome the baggage that is the blindness and the anger.
I certainly want James to speak a little more about the issue of anger. But first, we're going to take a little break from our interview. James has graciously agreed to help us with our Blind Justice segment. And so,
it's time again for another edition of TRRS Radio Theater on the Air with Bill McClure and James Benton with another episode of
Blind Justice.
The scene opens on a bare field during the Civil War. The silence is broken by a rifle shot.
Hey, Yankee! How's your canteen?
Same as yours. Got a hole in it.
Darn! I thought I had that canteen hid. How'd you see it?
Didn't. I heard it.
Wait a minute. Are you shooting blind?
You might say so.
The only person that could do that was a Yankee whippersnapper I knew up on Turkey Otter Creek years ago.
And the Honor Reb that lived on the other side of the creek that taught him.
One sound. One tiny little sound. That's all he needed.
Remember that time old Moss was trying to light the fire under his still?
Yeah, he was down to his last match.
And we heard it come out of his back pocket.
And before he could strike it?
You lit it for him.
Then you went and put it out. Sakes alive, those were some times.
And look at us now. How about we stir up a little fire? I could use a good hot cup of coffee.
We can't light a fire out here.
Why not? We can't see it.
Very funny. Everyone else in the county can.
I've got a little cave back here that I use.
Hot coffee would be nice. Sometime mine has been cold, and I'm running a little short on beans.
Beans I got lots of, but the nights have been getting kind of cold of late.
Maybe we could trade a little. I need some beans, and I have stacks of blankets I picked up.
Now, that would be might kindly of you. Here's the coffee.
Bill, what are you doing out here?
Same as you, I guess. Blind. Useless. Always getting in the way, they say. Get rid of him.
Sounds about right. They figured I was bad luck. Jonah with a gun, they called me. I could hear a guy eating and could shoot the fork right out of his hand. Did too one day. Funniest thing I ever saw. Guys running, silverware flying, and meat popping away. Sergeant didn't think it was so funny.
Reckon not.
Captain wouldn't let them shoot me, so they just run me off.
Been doing much killing?
Oh, yeah. Piling up rebs every day.
Really?
No. I could shoot the silverware right out of their hands and have them run away, but no. No.
I've got quite a record of canteens.
Last week I got a shovel trying to hide in a pair of boots. I caught them trying to sneak up on me.
Hey, James. Come on to the back of the cave a minute. Got something to show you.
What?
Just come on. You got to see this for yourself.
Funny.
Oh, you know what I mean.
What was that? Didn't sound like any critter I've ever heard. That was a man. Bill, what have you got going on back here?
I call it purgatory. It's hell with a little bit of hope. Not much, but a little.
And the men all came from the war?
After a battle, I go around. Scrape up what I can. Do what I can. Scrounge medicine and bandages, food, anything I can get a hold of. That's why I've got plenty of coffee and beans, but not so good on the blankets.
Both sides?
Both sides. And a couple of fellers unlucky enough to have been caught in the middle.
And all your shooting?
Keep strangers away. Every once in a while, a patrol comes by, and I tell them that I buried a few. Well, I did. It's just not what they thought. Besides, it keeps strangers away.
Ain't that a little like telling a lie?
I figure that lie's a lot more moral than taking the kid from the other side of the creek where we used to throw rocks at each other and shooting him because he's wearing a different color shirt than me. Reckon?
Reckon.
Welcome to purgatory. I got a couple of newly made widows that come down and help out now and then. But if you think you could stand purgatory for a while, I could sure use the help. What do you say?
Well, I'm almost out of beans. But like I said, I got a big pile of blankets. Besides, it'll give me an excuse for shooting a few more canteens. Be right back.
And so ends another episode of
Blind Justice.
We've had James Benton saving lives during our Civil War skit. And then, back to finding jobs with his position at Division of Services for the Blind. We were talking before about the issue of anger, the occurrence of which is quite common among persons who are termed handicapped. James, why don't you start with your childhood and tell us how your anger came about and how you dealt with it?
Dealing with blindness growing up was easy for me because I had a perfect role model, my granddad. He was totally blind. He had overcome that and a couple of strokes when I was a youngster. And he was still the kind of guy who would do anything he wanted to do. And his motto was, I'm going to do what I want to do. If I get hurt, I'm going to heal up and try again. You know, I believed in that motto. It made sense to me.
Makes sense.
You know, because he would say, we'll do anything we want. You know, if you get hurt, you're going to heal up. It'll be all right. We'll try again. And I lived by that when he was around. It was a great tool. Mm-hmm. He was not afraid of anything, and he was confident, and people respected him. And because of his demeanor and his role in the family, it made my role in the family very easy to define, and the family treated me very normally. I was expected to do the same things my sisters did. I took care of my room. I had to take care of my business at school. When I came home, I had to learn to do chores. They taught me how to cook so I could survive. My dad said, nobody's going to marry you. You're too ornery, so you need to learn how to cook. So I learned those basic things. But the one thing that I did not learn and could not learn because of the support I had at home and the support I had at Governor Moorhead, I was not going to be prepared for what the world at large had to offer when Blind James hit the streets. When that happened, I was a couple of years into my marriage. We were fresh out of Governor Moorhead, and it was different. Nobody wanted to hire you because you couldn't see. I applied for every type of job you could imagine and was turned down because I was blind. And so you start to get mad. You start to think of sighted people as scum. Perfect eyesight meant you were a horrible person because you would not understand me without the eyesight. You would react to people in a negative way, especially the ones who would come up to help. I encountered many people in my younger days that had come up out of the blue to provide support just because they saw that I was blind and they thought it might be a nice thing to offer help. And my reaction was never very positive. I was always very cocky, very arrogant, and very direct about dispatching them for even suggesting that I needed help when I had my cane in my hand and so forth. I told people many years later, and I'm sure that the Lord had a lot to do with this because it just happened out of the blue. I'd had some bad days leading up to this particular event. I remember going downtown, and I was walking down Fayetteville Street Mall, and there was a crowd in front of Hudson Belk, and most people with a good brain in their head will kind of pull their cane up and kind of walk through the crowd so you don't trip people. Not me. I went bullying through with the cane straight out. Lady backed over the cane and just missed one of those flower pots. I helped her up and apologized if she fell, but basically walked off like, well, if she'd have been looking, that wouldn't have happened. So a few days later, maybe a week or two later, I ended up downtown at the social services offices. They used to be located on the corner of Davie and McDowell, southwest corner. I had been there all afternoon. When I went to that building that day, it was perfectly normal outside. And I was there till the end of the day. And when I came out, I had an envelope full of papers. I opened the door, stepped outside, and the wind was blowing. The rain was falling. It was bad. And I turned to my right and headed down to the corner to cross the street so that I could get, I had to get up to Fayetteville Street to catch the bus. So I was going to not only have to cross McDowell, I had to get over and cross Salisbury too. But Salisbury I wasn't as concerned about because the traffic was one way south and it usually didn't involve a lot of trucks. McDowell Street is Capitol Boulevard and South Saunders Street. There's a lot of trucks, big vehicles coming through. So I stood there trying to figure out how to cross this street. I was struggling mightily. I could not hear. I couldn't read the traffic. The rain was crazy. The wind was howling. It was a bad storm, and there James was on the corner trying to figure out how to cross that street. I backed up and went to the building to see if I could get back inside to wait it out. The building was locked. So I went back to the corner. I said, I got to get across the street. And if I don't get up here and catch this bus, I'm going to be stuck downtown. I'm going to really get drowned down here. I stepped out into the street, took a couple of steps. I couldn't read the traffic. I backed up. I did that four or five times. Finally, I'm standing there, not knowing what to do, knowing I'm defeated because this natural circumstance has overcome my skill level. And I heard this little voice. And this little lady walks up beside me, and she's short, and she's got a little umbrella, and she's so short, the umbrella's hitting me in the shoulder. It's rainwater pouring off the umbrella right on top of me, and she says, sir, I see that you're trying to get across the street, and I parked my car down the road here, and I walked up here to see if I could help. I said to her, yes, ma'am, I am trying to get across this street. She says, well, may I help you? And I said, yes, please. She took my arm, and we went across the street, and she says, now, how far do you need to go? I said, I need to get to Fayetteville Street Mall so I can go down and catch the bus. She says, well, I'll walk you up there, and then I can come back to my car. I have an umbrella. So she walked me up to Fayetteville Street, and I was able to navigate down to the bus stop from there. But I thanked her profusely for getting me out of what was a real bind. I got home. I'm sopping wet. It's ridiculous. I got in there and got dried off, changed clothes and everything, and I just kind of sat in the living room. Sharon asked me, she said, well, what's the matter with you? I said, well, those papers are wet. She said, is that all is wrong with you? I said, no, I think I was taught a lesson today. I just got to absorb it. I realized right then that day that that was a message from sources far beyond me that I needed to make some changes, that I needed to do something about this anger that I was lugging around. I was telling a volunteer earlier that I'll debate with anybody that anger may be the worst bag of garbage you can carry, but it's one bag of garbage you can get rid of. Now, yep. Blindness is with me permanently. I am completely blind. I have no eyes. They've both been enucleated. I am going to be this way henceforth. This is who I am. This is what I am, and I'm just thankful to be alive. But that anger, I can dispatch of it and get rid of it. I put a plan in action that point to not have to deal with that anymore. And it felt so good to be able to finally be able to get up each day and not have to worry about who's going to say something that's going to tick you off, who's going to do something that's going to make you feel less than human. To just get up and know that you are human and know that you are perfect in God's own way. You don't have to worry about what people say, think, or do. They're just people, too. The one that counts is not there. He's way outside that system. And I learned that. I've adapted that and begun to practice that. And, you know, probably since I was 30, I've changed. You know, people that knew me in my teens and 20s, they knew me to be a pretty good guy, fairly smart guy, but they knew I was a pretty direct guy, too. Today, that person is completely gone, I think.
It's certainly been enlightening for our listeners to hear from you, James, and hear how you've handled these situations. And I personally appreciate what you're doing for not only our print and visually impaired audience, but for the community at large. It's been a joy to have you
as our guest today on Take My Arm.
Wow. That was fascinating.
James has a lot of insights into the conditions of blindness.
And, you know, speaking of insights, do you think maybe...
Good idea. It's time for Insights with Dr. Bill.
Dr. Bill, do you have any thoughts about James Benton's comments on anger and coming to grips with living after losing your sight?
Thoughts? Yes. But comments? No. James expressed the conditions that most sighted people go through when they lose their eyesight or have it greatly diminished. There is nothing that I could add.
And the result is that instead of just going through life, he's enjoying it.
Well, he has to, or else he wouldn't enjoy bowling so much. Dr. Bill, how do you think he is able to compete against sighted people?
Why don't we let James answer that for himself?
In our bowling language or lingua, we term everyone as a sighted bowler, a partial bowler, or a total bowler. Now, as far as competing in sighted leagues, that is done to a very limited extent in certain places across the country, but it's not something that occurs regularly. And the reason is fairly simple. I described the bowling reel earlier. If you have that apparatus on the lane, and you are working with people who are sighted who need the full approach and use the full left side or the full right side to place the ball to get that curve that they're looking to achieve, the rail can be a device that would keep them from being able to deliver the ball in a normal manner. And if the other teams don't have that device to impede them in their ability to bowl, then the person's bowling with the rail would be at a disadvantage.
And so ends another episode of Insights with Dr. Bill.
It's time again for the TRRS Radio Theater on the Air with another episode of
Blind Justice
with Bill McClure, Richard Dunnigan, James Benton, and Alan Radford. Our scene opens after the war, and the last of the wounded are being loaded on hospital wagons for transport to the nearest medical facility.
Well, soldier, I've got to admit, I've never seen a situation like this before. Out here in the middle of nowhere, two blind guys, all by yourselves, taking care of all these wounded and getting so many of them through.
We had some help, Captain.
Yeah, there was those couple of widow women who came down every now and then and helped change bandages.
A lot of times they were helping local boys that they knew.
It was pretty hard on them. They couldn't keep it up all the time.
You two did.
Shucks. We just couldn't see how bad things were.
If we'd known, we might have left.
Like the devil you two would have left. Tell me, how'd you manage?
We just worked together.
Right. He had the beans.
And he had the blankets. And you just do
what you gotta do.
As if it matters now, which one of you is the Yankee and which one of you is the Rev?
Well, now let's see. I grew up on one side of Turkey Otter Creek.
And I grew up on the other.
Water was running from my left to my right, so I must be the Rev.
Hold on. My daddy used to say that right there the creek ran north and south, so that makes you a Westerner.
Then what was going on? West wasn't fighting the East.
Maybe we ought to have a fight right now to decide it.
Come on, boys. What was it?
To tell the truth, Captain, we just sort of took turns.
After a battle, when we went out to see what we could do, we kept turning shirts one way or the other.
Right. It's not like we could see what was waiting for us out there. We just had to take our chances, and we didn't want somebody taking a shot at us for the wrong reason.
Speaking of people shooting at you, sorry about your canteen, Captain.
I wanted to talk to you two about that.
It was just our way of keeping strangers away, and we never hurt anyone.
We kind of forgot you were coming.
Forgot I was coming my rosy red.
Canteen! We just got carried away.
We knew this was our last time and, well,
for old time's sake.
Looks like we're all loaded up, except for one guy still back there.
What's the matter?
Don't know. Just said he wasn't coming out. Said he'd rather die than come out like he was. We're just going to have to leave him.
Wait a minute. Let me go talk with him.
Go away.
Hey, Alan. It's me, Bill.
I don't care who it is. Just leave me be.
But, Alan, just yesterday you were all excited. I told you the war was over and a hospital wagon was coming. You're going home.
It don't matter no more.
What happened?
The army doctor took the bandages off my face.
And?
I can't see, and I never will.
Could be a lot worse.
Not for me. I won't live like this.
Now look, Alan.
No, you look. Look at my face. Just look at me.
I can't.
Of course you can't, because of the way I look. I'm ugly. I'm deformed. Nobody can stand me. I can't live like that. And that's why you won't look at me.
Alan, I didn't say I wouldn't look at your face. I said I can't. If I could, I would look at your face all day long. It would be a real joy for me. But I can't.
What are you talking about?
Alan, I'm blind.
What?
Since the day I was born.
But you changed my bandages. You kept me warm and you fed me all these weeks.
And did it make a dang bit of difference what I looked like while I was doing it?
But you had James helping you.
I sure did. And what a help he was. And he's blind too.
The both of you?
What do you think is wrong with the soldier in there?
We've known it for some time, but I think Alan just found out that his wound is going to leave him blind.
Think Bill will be able to talk him out?
I think so. Bill has a knack.
Then I wish he would talk to me.
Why? You're not blind.
No, my eyes work. But I sure can't see what good this war did for either side. People dead, all shot up, families torn apart, lives ruined, and all the bad feelings still going on. How are we going to make anything good come out of all this suffering?
Well, Captain, I think that's the same sort of question that young soldier is asking right now. And the answer Bill would give you is the same answer I think he's giving to him.
What's that?
What do you want to make out of it? Quit making excuses about why you can't do something. Do it. You just might surprise yourself. Hey, I can hear them coming out. And they're marching.
So they are. Well, I'll be. He got his shirt button and his cap on, and they are indeed marching, the both of them. Soldier, you sure you don't want for me to send for a stretcher?
No, sir. If it's all the same to you, I'd rather take myself. I got Bill here by the arm, and James... I'd be right thankful if you'd come over here on my other side. Let's go.
And so ends another episode of...
Blind Justice.
Conversations. The voices of TRRS.
Our guest this evening is Andy Raby. Andy, welcome to Triangle Radio Reading Service and to Take My Arm.
Thank you for having me.
Tell us about yourself.
I'm a native North Carolinian. I was born and raised in Hickory, North Carolina. I've been in Raleigh for the past 28 years, married with three wonderful boys. I work for the North Carolina Department of Health and Human Services in the Division of Social Services. I do a lot of disaster coordination during disaster events in North Carolina. I enjoy U.S. history, especially World War II history. I'm an avid reader.
Can you tell us anything about the last disaster that you were involved with?
Well, that was Hurricane Irene. Since I work for the Division of Social Services, I work in the Emergency Operations Center for the state of North Carolina. Part of my job is working with the American Red Cross and the Salvation Army in shelters for people leaving a disaster area and mass feeding operations that assist people who don't have the food or are away from home.
So that would mean that you would have to work a lot of long and unusual hours?
I usually work a 12-hour shift during that time, so it makes for a very long day.
What is your special area of interest relating to TRRS?
Well, I love TRRS, but mainly because I like to use my voice. I like to read. I think getting the information out to people who need that daily influx of information is very important to me. I love reading the newspaper every single morning and like to think that I'm bringing that joy to somebody else who doesn't have that opportunity.
What program do you read for TRRS?
I am the every other Tuesday night USA Today reader. I do the first and third Tuesdays of every week starting at 7 o'clock. So if you're out there listening and you love my mellow voice, please tune in at 7 on Tuesday, the first and third Tuesdays.
Had you ever known a blind or visually impaired person before you started reading for TRRS?
Actually, when I first started out in my career, I was a teacher of the deaf and hard of hearing and had several deaf-blind students in my classroom. So I knew a lot of children at that time. Plus, also working for the Department of Health and Human Services in North Carolina, we work with services for the blind and visually impaired, so I have known several blind people.
Where was your first experience in teaching the deaf?
My first experience was in college when I worked for the Central North Carolina School for the Deaf, where I did my training. Did more training at the Morganton School for the Deaf, and then I taught in mainstream programs down in Charleston, South Carolina, where I had deaf-blind children.
Well, that's fascinating. Did you find special problems with mainstreaming the deaf and blind in public school?
You know, it's always a tough thing to do with mainstreaming. It takes such a lot of extra participation by the school. If you have a school that's really interested and really wants to work with these kids, it's just a joy. But again, they're overcoming such obstacles in their own life. I mean, they're growing. They're regular teenagers and regular kids, but they also have that little extra, you know, functional needs that have to be looked at also.
Could you give us an example of a case that's especially memorable to you?
Well, I worked in a high school down in Charleston, South Carolina, so I dealt with a lot of young adults, basically. I mean, these kids were 16 to 18, 19 years old. Not only are they first branching out away from their families, but there's also that first love experience, the first relationship experience. And I think for any child, that's a hard one to go through. But when you're followed around by an interpreter or somebody who's always with you, it's a little harder to get that private time with a relationship. So I think that's always challenging.
I can see where that would be even more challenging for a deaf student than it would for a blind student.
Probably so. I think I saw it on both ends of that. Always interesting, fun to watch, these kids grow up.
What do you hope to accomplish as a TRRS volunteer?
I think, again, bringing that joy of the daily news, even if it's good or bad, it's just that realization that things are happening out in the world, not just in Raleigh and not just in the United States, but all over the world. There's some fascinating stories, good, bad, and ugly, that I enjoy every day, and I hope to bring that same kind of interest to the people that listen in.
As a volunteer, you had a lot of opportunities, a lot of different places you could have chosen to volunteer. How did you happen to choose TRRS as your organization with which to volunteer?
I learned about TRRS through a couple of friends of mine. I was looking for a volunteer opportunity. I have done Meals on Wheels. I have worked in soup kitchens. But because of my work schedule, it was harder and harder to do that. This schedule, working in the evenings on the, again, folks, the first and third Tuesday of every month at 7 o'clock, is a little bit easier for my schedule, but it also still makes me feel like I'm giving something to my community.
As a reader, you're instructed to read the material specifically as it's printed, but here you have an opportunity to say what you really feel to the listeners. What would you really like to say as a message from your heart?
I guess since we need to read it pretty solid and pretty straightforward, listen to some of the nuances in our voice sometimes, because we're really having a great time. My co-reader, Tim Therington, and I, we have fun together. And I hope that comes through in the radio, that we're enjoying bringing the news to people. I truly, truly enjoy this volunteer opportunity. It's a lot of fun. It's very rewarding. And I hope that comes across every first and third Tuesday of every month as we read at 7 o'clock. And after those Tuesday evenings, if you want to call in and say how wonderful a job that Tim and I are doing on the first and third Tuesdays of every month, we'd love to hear from you, because that's one of the things, we don't get a lot of feedback. But please call in and say that Tim and Andy are the best. So the number here, again, is 919-832-5138. And just like in our regular evening messages, I'll repeat that number at 832-5138.
Thank you, Andy, for taking the time to join us today on Take My Arm. We raced across the schoolyard so many years ago, impossible all by myself, changes I could not know. So you held out your arm, then crossed the fields we'd run. We did it neath the moon and stars, likewise a warming sun. Oh, we had our share of trips and bumps, but never did they harm, since it was you who'd choose the course, and I would choose your arm. Then came city traffic lights, yellow, red, and green. Away we'd go through all the snarls and the troubles left unseen. Cars would stop, cars would go, traveling by so fast, before we knew their coming, we realized they'd passed. Forget the honks, ignore the yells, their noise caused no alarm, since you were there beside me, and I held on to your arm. A date, a dance. Oh, should I go? Which way am I to turn? There seemed so much for me to know. How simple it was to learn. I took your arm, and you took mine. Across the floor we'd glide, sometimes fast and sometimes slow, but always side by side. How easy it was! And then to find such fun, such joy, a charm-filled life when you reach out and touch a waiting arm. Then graduation. I was so proud, I heard them call my name. I strode up to the platform, onto that stage I came. Not a smile did I see that day, but I felt them all the same. A briefest silence followed. Then again, they spoke my name. I had done it, yes, but not alone. Beside, I felt you warm. One hand grasped my diploma, the other caressed your arm. Then one day, quite unexpectedly, she came into my life. When she offered me her elbow, a house, a home, a wife. What to do? Where to go? What would the future hold? Would we be able to survive? Her arm, the stories told. Through grocery trips and bills to pay, tended furnaces to keep us warm. What a joy it's been through all these years to reach out and take your arm. Oh, through the years were many friends who've spent some time with me, and from that arm that I could feel, there was care that I could see. We've shared business and pleasure. We've shared joy and also care. You didn't even have to speak. I knew that you were there. I dared go on each and every day, a future without alarm, because you were there beside me and offered me your arm.
This story is not ended here. One more voice before we go, and you must hear it now if the truth you wish to know. I am one of many friends whose arm was there to touch, to cross a street, to climb a stair, to talk to, and the such. And it may not be seen by those who saw the many open doors, though there were times you held my arm, so many more when I needed yours.
You see beauty in the fragrance of the flowers when they bloom. You see brightness in the sunshine as it warms your face in June. You hear laughter in the children, and you see their beaming smiles. You see friendship when you talk with me a while. You can see the good in people when I only see skin deep. You see the need that's often hidden in the people that you meet. Just because I view the world with such different eyes than you, does it mean that I can see more than you do? Would you help me to see the world like you? Take my arm, walk with me, and together we can see. I need you, and you need me. Take my arm, take my arm, stand together, we will see how the world was meant to be. Take my arm, take my arm, take my arm.
Thank you for listening in to another edition of Take My Arm.
This program is intended for a print and visually impaired audience and is designed with the assistance of print and visually impaired volunteers.
We invite your comments. Just call us at 919-832-5138. And especially call if you would be able to help underwrite some of our programming here at TRRS. Any financial help you can offer goes directly to keeping us on the air and is deeply appreciated.
So until next week, this is Bill McClure,
Richard Dunnigan,
and Bob Martin.
Goodbye.